Welcome to Corps Volunteer Training, a program that was created to help our supporters in CCL, especially newer volunteers, connect with each other around a larger world and empower them to achieve their larger goals for climate advocacy. So tonight's topic is communicating with conservatives. Tonight's talk, we're going to have three main points. The first point that you'll hopefully that will come across through tonight is that conservatives and liberals rely on different sets of core values when they're evaluating what's acceptable behavior, what is acceptable for them to do. A second point is that successful presentations and successful discussions with people that you run into over coffee or across a fence in your backyard focus on the audience's values. That successful presentation can be really crafted around your audience's values. And the third point that we'll touch on at the end is that there are resources to help with this, outreaching to conservatives online, and we'll share where some of those are. And I do want to start with one ground rule. I ask that you assume the best in intentions of everyone during our talk tonight as we're talking about political affiliation and what progressives think, what conservatives think, left, right. Sometimes I use words that might push your button, and it's not my intent. But when we're talking in a politically divided country about the politics of the country, oftentimes we can bump into emotional issues and just assume the best intentions throughout our conversation. So I am the conservative outreach director in Citizens Climate Lobby. I have a background in environmental cleanups. I had a career doing environmental cleanups with a background in geochemistry, and left my job to try and have a voice in moving our country forward on climate policies about 6 years ago. Took about a year to find Citizens Climate Lobby, and have now been active with Citizens Climate Lobby for 5 years, and on staff for about a year and a half now, trying to help us focus on our outreach to conservatives across the country and find good ways to do that. Our agenda tonight is going to have five main pieces. We're going to talk a little bit about conservative values, like what are those? What do we mean when we say conservatives have different values than liberals? And we're going to rely on Jonathan Haidt's work. We're going to then talk about how these differences in values relate to our discussions on carbon dividends, on HR 763, and on climate policy in general. We're going to have a short group discussion, then we're going to go through some resources on community and make sure we have time at the end for some question and answer and discussion as a group. So let's dive right in. The structure that I like to use for talking about conservative values is work by Jonathan Haidt, who is a researcher who has spent time looking at how different people evaluate what is acceptable behavior in cultures across the world. Has kind of taken that to an additional level by querying people on their political affiliations in cultures across the world, and really differentiating, coming to the realization that people that consider themselves more conservative, not just in the United States, but more conservative across the world, tend to rely on a little bit different suite of five core values. So Jonathan Haidt has created this idea that he calls moral foundations theory, of morals just being what we consider when we're evaluating what's appropriate for us to do, and foundation, like what's the bedrock of the ideas that we consider when we're evaluating what's appropriate behavior. And has come with these, he usually uses five dimensions. Sometimes you'll see him write about a sixth dimension that I just want to walk through. So these are things that we, people in general, consider when they're evaluating what's right and wrong, what's right and appropriate to do. One is, does it harm somebody? Or does it care for somebody? If it harms somebody, we generally agree it's not appropriate to do. A second one, is it fair? So I may not want to harm people. I may hold firmly that we can't harm anybody else. Like, I couldn't just go take away your car or lock you up. However, if you're caught drunk driving for a second offense, I may think it's perfectly okay for our government to collectively lock you up and take away your car. There's a fairness component in all these different evaluations can compete with each other and even seemingly contradict in certain cases. So harm and care, fairness. A third dimension that we consider when we're evaluating whether something's right for us to do is in-group loyalty. with the opposite of that being betrayal, where we do things differently for people that we are loyal to. And if you've ever watched your spouse or anybody else deal with their family, you know that all of us have this at some level. Another dimension is authority versus subversion, which relates to obeying both tradition and legitimate authority. And this stems right out of, you know, you can go back in childhood when my dad told me to eat my peas, I ate my peas. It also varies through time. If my dad told me today to eat my peas, it might be an interesting conversation, but it might not have the same end. It might relate to a conversation than just me eating my peas. Another dimension is purity, where what is pure and sacred. And if we degrade those, there's a degradation component on the other end that some people consider when they're evaluating what is appropriate behavior. And a sixth one we're not going to talk about tonight as much is liberty versus oppression with the concept of loathing tyranny. So Jonathan Haidt took this a little further. I want to explain the graph that I've just brought up. On the left hand, on the up-down scale, the vertical axis, there's a five numbered scale where at the top of this is people saying, hey, this dimension is, I strongly agree that this is relevant. That black line in the middle is just, yeah, it's kind of neutral. And down at the bottom is people saying, no, I do not consider this dimension relevant. I think this is not relevant. And along the bottom axis of this, he's categorized data on people that have identified themselves as or have been identified through some of his questions as strongly liberal, moderately liberal, slightly liberal, neutral, to the same slightly conservative, moderately conservative, and strongly conservative. And what he's found across multiple cultures is that people that identify themselves as more liberal tend to focus on, does it harm somebody and is it fair? Those are the moral dimensions that they think are most relevant. And I've even had somebody while I was talking to them about this say, in-group loyalty, nothing good ever came from that. There are people that really think that the other dimensions, evaluating whether something's pure and sacred or whether you're degrading something and authority, get in the way of good discussions about, are you harming people and is it fair? As you move to the conservative side, so those are the dimensions that people that are more liberal or progressive in our society rely on more heavily when they're evaluating what is acceptable behavior. And this is in bulk average. So this is not saying every person that identifies them over there or that everybody splits out this evenly. As we shift over and look at people that call themselves more conservative or classify themselves as more conservative, they tend to rely on authority, purity, and group loyalty also. The harm and fairness dimensions are down, are not as important. They're still important for them. It's not that people who consider themselves conservative think it's just okay to go harm somebody. But those dimensions are weighted in a broader mix of values that they use when they're evaluating what is appropriate behavior. I want to take a little bit of time and kind of unwrap this and say, so this is really interesting work. Jonathan Haidt, you can watch him on YouTube. He's done a bunch of talks. I should have brought the book over. He's also written a good book on exactly this subject. But I want to take a little bit of time on the three dimensions that conservatives are more likely to use when they're evaluating what's acceptable behavior and dig into that a little bit and talk specifically about how does it relate to us going out and talking about climate policy. So I'm going to talk about in-group loyalty and how that relates to speaking to conservatives. Recognizing that conservatives consider in-group loyalty more stronger than most people that would identify themselves as progressive or liberal. A really just fundamental piece in this is that we often display our loyalties without really recognizing it, both in the examples we bring up, in the people we quote, as well as even in our slide deck. So I know that, I think it was just this last weekend, there was a climate reality training, a very large one in Atlanta that I know have a bunch of friends that went in and attended. And if you walk into a conservative audience with your climate reality slide deck, You have to recognize that what you are saying to them is that I am loyal to the Democratic Vice President of the United States who ran against the Republican to become the President of the United States, and that you're expressing that in the choice of the logo that you have on the bottom of your slides. I am not in this saying that those slides are not, that the content is not appropriate, or that the content is wrong in any way. But what I'm expressing here is that if you are speaking to a conservative audience, recognize which parts of your loyalty you may be expressing to them, or even kind of giving them proofs that you are loyal to different groups than they are. And you may instead want to the bottom picture here, take as an example some quotes from James Baker and George Shultz, who are speaking to President Reagan there, and use some quotes from Baker and Shultz, and maybe go back to source material. If you're looking for a slide that presents CO2 over time, find something from NOAA or NASA, and not have something with a green circle on the Earth on the bottom that's saying, I really want to tell you that Vice President Gore is really the person you should be listening to on this subject. It also plays out in how you present what you're concerned about. Why is it that we need to address this? So it is okay to play a harm card here, that people get hurt by this. This will hurt the economy. This will hurt people's jobs. It will hurt people. When you're speaking to people that value in-group loyalty, it is better to speak to people in their group that are going to get hurt. It is better to speak to people that are in their circle of concern. So instead of speaking of the people in Bangladesh or the people in Africa that just got hit by a very strong cyclone, speak about the flooding in Houston. Here in Asheville, I can speak about the flooding in Fayetteville, where in the lower parts of North Carolina, we've had 2 1,000-year flood events in the course of 2 years. So find your local audience and talk about the local impacts. It really is important to know your local impacts of climate change. Are you a little warmer than average, or a little wetter, or a little drier? What's been happening recently? Having some local statistics for the audience you're talking about can be really important. This is not about ignoring international concerns. So this sequence of three photos I'm going to show here, I just presented to our local Chamber of Commerce. We got an opportunity to present to about 35 people on our local Chamber of Commerce's policy committee this last week. And I presented our local impacts first, some flooding in Asheville, some landslides that happen with increased rain, some forest fires that happen around here when it gets too dry, when it's hot. And I wanted to bring in international pieces. But I did it from a perspective of relating these back to their values, what they're concerned about. So this picture is from an extremely severe storm north of Germany that just happened this year. And this is a container ship where the storm was so severe that it rocked the boat so hard it knocked over 200 of the containers on this container ship off the ship. And as you can see in the photo, damaged some more. And I tied it back into their businesses by saying, so this climate change around the world will impact your supply chain, your ability to get your products to other places, your ability to get products, materials that you rely on to your business. This is a picture of a Honda plant in Thailand where they had significant flooding in 2011. It closed down 200 plants like this. And for our local businesses that do international business, their supply chains are impacted and their ability to get materials are impacted through this type of impact. And also, so up in the mountains in Western North Carolina, we do not deal with sea level change, but I brought it into the discussion through a picture of the Miami. Flooding along the coastal states impacts our regional economy that we really depend on for tourists here, as well as for our business. The migrations of people will affect people inland from the coastal economy and will affect our economy here. So I'm not speaking about ignoring international issues, but everything that you bring up, you need to relate to something in group or in the group for the values of the group you're talking to. So on each of these three items, I have a slide with a couple of links that you can pop up later. These are some links that might help you find resources for talking about local impacts, as well as some quotes from conservatives for giving people messages from inside their group, as opposed to having all your messaging and quotes rely on people from outside their group. A second dimension that I wanted to talk through is authority versus subversion. So conservatives, on average, think that evaluating people in positions of authority, legitimate people positions of authority, is very relevant when they're considering what's appropriate behavior. And progressives tend to think that's less important. And the two pictures here relate right into climate. The top is our National Guard at the border, at the south border of the United States. Recent picture. And the bottom is the yellow-vested demonstrations over in France that you hear messaged from the right, because it plays into this authority versus subversion messaging that you need to be very careful on how you are messaging and consider if you are triggering authority subversion responses in your audience. An example I would give that I've seen that I if you are speaking to a conservative audience and you have a really motivational clip from somebody that is organizing people skipping schools on Friday to protest climate change, that may not be the best start for a climate talk to a group of conservatives. It may not convince them that you have the same values that they do. So consider that as you evaluate how you are going about a dialogue with conservatives, what you're bringing into those conversations. And again, the conservative quotes one is good. We also have some good press releases there's a link there for some press releases regarding conservatives that have been in the news making statements about climate change. There have been a number of Republican members in Congress that have made some very solid statements on climate change lately that you can use. And the third dimension I want to talk a little bit about while we're talking about Jonathan Haidt's work is purity versus degradation. Conservatives are more likely to consider in evaluating what's appropriate behavior if things are pure and if degrade them. And so what does this look like? This is my favorite example for this, because it's so clear cut. Many conservatives consider the flag sacred. We have the ability to say we are trying to reach out to conservatives, or we have the ability to say, I just want to make a point. So the picture on the far right here is a good example of a way to maybe push someone's button, intentionally even, if they think that the flag is sacred. You know, use it as part of a costume to say America is there to, you know, with a match ready to blow up the world, and that and use the flag as part of a costume where you're saying making a negative statement there, not using it as someone that considers the flag sacred would use it. And the alternative on the left is an actual march for science. Where some people did not hear my talk. This was, I found the slide the first time I did it before the first, after the slide picture was taken, I created this talk. But they thought through how would we communicate to people that consider the flag sacred, and they put it on a pole and had it at the front of their march. It's a great signal and a great message to send some messaging around. And as you can see from the sign right behind it, science trumps alternate facts. This is not necessarily just a group full of conservatives that are there from the far right. This is a march for science. So some additional, there are many things that we consider that people consider pure and sacred. Parts of our history, you can get very tripped up on this if you can bump into issues. American history, people from America, farther back in American history, as well as religious references. So if you share a faith tradition with somebody else, you can share parts from that faith tradition. There's a couple of links that you can explore. Evangelicals Environmental Network, Mitch Hescock's group, as well as Young Evangelicals for Climate Action have some good material. I would put both of those groups in the rather progressive, but they are evangelical Christians, and they have some solid messaging from within that group that relates very well to purity from an evangelical perspective. Catherine Hayhoe has some wonderful material on this. There's also a Citizens Climate Radio as well as you know, finding biblical verses or similar pieces within the Mormon faith tradition or other faith traditions, if you are reaching out to conservatives with different backgrounds, different faith traditions. So this is I think where I'm going to leave it with Jonathan Haidt, but really just stress coming back to say as you're preparing a presentation or a talk, or even as you find yourself talking, look for the ways in your conversation where you can support the idea that authority, purity, and in-group loyalty are appropriate values for somebody to consider when they're evaluating what's acceptable behavior, as well as look for ways where you may throw out examples that push somebody's button that considers authority, purity, and in-group loyalty. And when you're relying on the harm and fairness arguments, which are still appropriate arguments to make, if you can cross-link them with an in-group loyalty conversation or other values at the same time, that can strengthen your argument a lot more than just making it all about is it fair, making it the arguments more about fairness. But I want to relate this more specifically over to the bill and kind of concrete messaging you might be facing right now as you're talking about HR 763 with people in your community. So just a first point, the five messaging points that CCL has put forward are designed to be effective on both sides of the aisle. That our policy is effective at reducing emissions, that it's good for people, it improves the health, there's co-benefits for health, as well as giving the money back people helps people deal with the increased costs. It's good for the economy, it creates jobs, it's bipartisan, we're really holding that together, and it's revenue neutral. All these speaking points are good places to start. But I want to expand on it just a little bit to offer a little bit more than that. If you are not familiar with the economists' statement on carbon dividends, I really encourage you to look up this piece that was published as in the Wall Street Journal on January 17th. It's also available as a one-page PDF from the Climate Leadership Council. It has four or five points that 40 leading economists signed on to publish it in the Wall Street Journal, and the points that they bring up are 100% consistent with our policy. So while Climate Leadership Council and CCL have two different policy positions that we're working with, the economist statement on carbon dividends that the Climate Leadership Council coordinated describes their policy, but it also describes our policy perfectly. It does not include a liability a waiver. If you read it, there's nothing in there that contradicts our policy, and it is a great place to start a discussion with a conservative because of the economists they brought on board. So these 40 leading economists include 15 chair of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. That's a mouthful. And as you expect, those 15 include the chairs that were brought to the position and served under President Obama and Clinton. That might be expected, but it also includes the chairs that Presidents Ford, President Reagan, President George H.W. Bush, and President George W. Bush all appointed to those positions and had advised them. These people have now signed on to this policy saying this is what needs to happen. Global climate change is a serious problem, calling for immediate action, national action guided by sound economic principles. And here's a nice laid out description that they've signed off on a carbon fee and dividend plan. So if you're speaking to conservative audiences, I've actually rearranged a slide deck where this is the first thing I present when I go into a conservative audience, and then I explain how our bill is consistent with this and what additional, as you flush this out into a 40-page bill as opposed to a one-page statement, you add details, so I explain the details that go behind it. In addition, you can bring up the conservative tradition of conserving. There are a lot of great examples of Republicans doing positive things on the environment that you can bring into your talk, and I'd encourage you to become familiar with them. And feel free to, there's a link for quotes down here. If you are not familiar with the work that Ronald Reagan did on the Montreal Protocol, I would really suggest you become familiar with that if you're going to talk to conservatives, because it's a perfect example of an international agreement to solve a global climate change in chemistry that was affecting us, where President Reagan listened to the scientists and went forward and negotiated with the countries around the world a treaty that we still hold up as a model of what we can do today. And in that link for quotes, Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady in the UK, was a chemist by training and really understood climate change. And there's some wonderful quotes from Margaret Thatcher in there also, where she articulated very clearly what the issue was a long time ago. Another angle to take when you're talking to conservatives that I use frequently is about personal responsibility and framing the entire discussion of climate change about me wanting to be personally responsible and us collectively wanting to be personally responsible. And I will frequently pull it into a national debt conversation of making the parallel discussion that I don't think it's okay for us to be spending money that we're not covering today, where we're just putting it onto our kids. And the same value holds here, that I don't think it's fair or okay for it to be free for me to dispose of my trash into the air at no cost, or for anybody else to be able to dispose of their trash into the air when it's affecting other people, and just passing the expenses on to our kids. So making these personal responsibility, making this issue of personal responsibility, and really not making any reference to our use of energy as being bad. I usually try and point out that I think our use of energy is good. It is the only way that you are listening to me tonight. I am powered in North Carolina, where right now I am powered by a coal-fired power plant that's going to switch over to natural gas. If we were not emitting CO2, you would not be listening to me tonight. I would not have these lights on. I would not have had a cooked meal tonight. I would not have been able to drive to the store to get groceries. And I think there's the final point on describing the dividend. So just one final point is, as we're looking at how we describe H.R. 763 and Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividends Act and carbon dividends in general, we often talk about the value of giving the money back equally to people, being that people in the lower income brackets get more money back, then they're going to see an increased cost. And this fairness quotient is what we really rely on here. And it's even progressive. We use that from a tax perspective of saying, hey, this is progressive. People at the lower end income brackets are going to make money. And the fairness argument is really appropriate for conservatives, but this messaging I really advise you to be careful around. The angle I take on describing the dividend, and even if somebody asks me, how is this going to affect lower income people, I do not start with, they're going to be okay because the dividend, they're going to get back more money than they're going to see an increased cost. I start back just a step and say, with an equal dividend, people will make their own choices, and people who choose to emit less will make out. They'll get back more money than they see an increased cost. People that choose to emit less will get back more money than they see an increased cost. Today, when you look at people with lower income brackets, they typically emit less because they don't get on a jet plane as often. They don't have as big of a house. They don't have multiple cars. They don't take vacations at the same rate. They don't consume as many material goods. And so all the modeling shows that people in those lower income brackets are going to get back more money than they see an increased cost because of the choices they make. And so they're not going to get harmed by this. So you can get to that as fair, and they're not going to get harmed while layering on a personal choice, personal responsibility layer. And the reason I bring this up is because there are a number of conservatives that I've seen push back saying, this is just an income redistribution plan. That's what this is. You guys want, like, this is a step into universal incomes. And making it about personal choice and the consequences of our choices and framing it that way can help, when you're speaking to conservatives, help allow them to hear that this is a program that's consistent with their values, with how they consider what's appropriate behavior. All right, so I've kind of I got one more. Sorry. So we also have this phrase. This is getting a nitpicky point. We have a phrase that the policy creates 2.1 million additional jobs over the next 10 years in the clean energy economy. And I've heard people say this multiple ways where I feel it's important to bring it up. I usually stay away from the phrase clean energy economy. Really, it's just in our economy. The economy is going to grow. We're going to have different sources of power. It will the energy mix is going to fix over to clean energy. But the jobs that it's creating, as you may know if you've studied the Remy report, are in areas like healthcare, consumer goods are the biggest areas where there's new jobs. And this 2.1 million jobs is not 2.1 million people out there installing solar panels and increasing insulation in people's houses. So it's really important, not when you're speaking to conservatives in particular, not to confuse the clean energy economy in that statement with jobs and clean energy, because there will be more jobs in clean energy, but not 2.1 million more jobs in clean energy than you're going to see losses from other sectors. But the stimulus effect of giving the money back to people and letting them go spend it is what is really the driver of this increase in jobs. So I bring this up because I've seen people get called on it and not deal with getting called on it very well. When people say, I don't really believe there's 2.1 million new jobs in clean energy that are going to get created. So with that, I want to close by just saying, if you're creating a talk, the more conservative you think your audience is, if you're going out and giving an talking to an audience where one of your goals is really to speak to conservatives, if you can insert some of these ideas, I encourage you to, and then I really encourage you to pull back everything that doesn't relate to your audience. So the chamber, I just said I'd spoke to our local chamber. I removed everything in the talk that did not relate to businesses or jobs in Asheville, North Carolina or Buncombe County. I did not talk about carbon tax policy in other countries or in Canada. If I could not relate it to jobs and the health of companies in Asheville, North Carolina, I did not bring it in. So my analogy here is a nice pretty picture of a cat that's, you know, kind of cute. He's walking and getting his paws rather wet. And what I want to encourage you to avoid is thinking if you just drop a slide in that you're fine. Then you've covered conservatives because you had a slide that was conservative friendly. If this was a talk that I wanted to appeal to cat lovers, and I included my old slide deck and said, I put my drop-in slide for talking to conservatives, it would not really be appealing to conservatives. It would be appealing to dog lovers. And I'm not trying to say what animal represents what, but my point here is the drop in slides are nice, but what you really want to do is look at the content of your talk and evaluating it if it's speaking to the audience you're presenting to. And if there are parts that are not speaking to the audience you're presenting to, just cut them out. That the goal is to connect with your audience and connect with the values your audience has. When you're especially when you're thinking about speaking to really to any audience. What I'd like to do now I've thrown a lot on the table. And what I'd like to do is do a breakout session where I'm going to combine you each in groups of two and just talk for, let's say 4 minutes on, like of the ideas that you heard tonight, what do you think you could add to your talks or pull out of your talks if you know you're talking to a conservative audience?
Yeah, thanks so much, Jim. Well, to wrap up, let's make sure to do a quick review of where to find and connect with the Conservative Caucus on CCL Community. You can see here on the screen that we've highlighted the Connect with Others button, the main menu item, rather, of the main community. And then once you click on that, click on the Action Team Directory option in the drop-down tab, and then from there, click on the Conservative Caucus link. When in there, you can see there's a couple of wonderful ways to participate. First and foremost, you can click on the Forums button on the left-hand side there that Jim has created an arrow to. And from there, you can ask any questions you might have of the Conservative Caucus volunteers and CCL leaders around the country. You'll see one of the discussion features of late around conservative topics. You can also see on the homepage that there's a More Info tab that Jim has highlighted here, a box on the right-hand side. And from there, all of those resources are available, including this first one, which Jim has spotlighted as the conservative outreach ideas in the list of ways that you can reach out in your local community. As a quick review, the 3 points that we hope that you've really been able to experience tonight is understanding that conservatives and liberals rely on different values when evaluating what is acceptable behavior, and to really be able to use that understanding in your own successful presentations and conversations that focus more on the audience's values and meet them wherever they might be at, to bring them closer in dialogue on the important issue of climate change. Then lastly, we really hope that this review has also highlighted some resources that you can use in your own leverage and outreach to conservatives within CCL community. A reminder that Core Volunteer Training is a program available every week, and if you're interested, you can go on community to see what the upcoming resources are, as well as check out the most recent versions of past lessons. And we'd love to just close tonight by thanking Jim for his excellent leadership. Here's Jim's contact information, james.tolbert@citizensclimate.org, as well as a link to the Energy Innovation Act form. If you have any questions, we'd love to help support you and all ahead. Thank you so much for your time. We hope that you found tonight's webinar useful, and we look forward to working together in our important outreach in all ahead.